So there's this person. I don't want to give away her name, but there's this person that I'm married to. That oh, did that give it away? Oh, sorry. Who when we're watching a show together, she's really good at figuring out the plot of what's going to happen next. You know, where the plot is leading, that kind of thing. And she has been known on occasion to blurt out, "Oh, it's so obvious, you know, this is what's going to happen next." Now, for a person like myself, who's not so good at foreseeing where a plot is going, and just really enjoy seeing where it goes as it plays out, I could really get annoyed by that if I weren't so patient and gracious. And this unnamed person is having a coughing fit right now. But all of that to say, lead up to this. There's nothing like a good plot twist, something unexpected to keep it interesting, right? I mean, the unexpected thing can be a very important thing. And in a way, God has a little bit of a plot twist for us today. A question that I believe he wants us to wrestle with that's a little different than the usual questions that we kick around at church. It's a question you might not expect, maybe one that you've never even thought of, but a question that I think will help keep our spiritual lives from being too predictable. And the unexpected question for today's message is this, number one in your outline: can God trust you? Can God trust you? This is a little unexpected because in the church, we usually talk a whole lot more about us trusting God, right? And the reasons that we have to trust Him and what that looks like when we trust God and so forth. I mean, faith, which is just another word for trust, right, is one of those foundational, fundamental things that's needed in a relationship with God, right? But a relationship is supposed to go both ways, right? I mean, a healthy relationship between two people means, among other things, that the two both trust each other. That's kind of important. But few people ever ask, "Can God trust me?" I just can't think of anybody that I've ever heard ask that question. But to ask, am I the kind of person that God can be open with, that God can connect with, that God can entrust important things to? I think those are really good questions for us to be asking ourselves. In the text, in the Gospel of John, we find Jesus in Jerusalem for the Passover festival. It's early on in the Gospel, early on in his ministry. Lots of people there. And there's that episode where he turns over the tables of the money changers, and we won't focus on that right now. But verse 23 says there were a whole lot of people there who saw miracles that he did, and it says that they believed in him. They believed in his name. At some level, they put some faith in him. But then it says in verse 24 and 25, very interestingly, but Jesus would not entrust himself to them, for he knew all men. He didn't need man's testimony about man, for he knew what was in a man. Now, let's just stop there for a moment. I don't know about you, but I normally think about Jesus as being a very engaging kind of person. You know, the person who wasn't afraid to start up conversations with strangers. And you see him as just that kind of a person, wanting to connect with others. That's what the Gospels portray for the most part. But here, this seems really out of character for Jesus, doesn't it? He's holding back. It says he wouldn't entrust himself to them. King James Version says wouldn't commit himself to them. Why wouldn't he do that? I mean, why wouldn't he put himself out there? Again, it just doesn't seem like Jesus. But it says right in the text, he knew what was in their hearts. He didn't need anyone to tell him anything about human nature, how people can be. He knew that those kind of things. And he saw something in these people, even those that said they put their faith in him, he saw something he didn't trust, and so he held back. What's he saying? He's basically saying, I can't trust you. In fact, it's the same language used of the people believing in him. In other words, it could well be translated, they believed in him, but he didn't believe in them. They trusted him at some level, but he couldn't trust them. But is that fair? I mean, again, they put faith in him, believed in his name. I mean, doesn't that count for something? Why wouldn't he reciprocate then and put faith in them and open up to them more? Well, we'll get to more of that. But this is the unexpected question that I really believe God wants us to wrestle with. You know, C.S. Lewis said, it's a whole lot safer subject to talk about God's love for us than to talk about our love for God. And in the same way, it's a whole lot safer for us to ask, can we trust God, than it is for us to ask, can God trust us? But it's an important question nonetheless. Why? Well, point number two in your outline is why you want God to trust you. All right? Why does this matter? Why does this question even, why should we care about this question? I think about times that people have handed me, just for example, have handed me keys to their car, sometimes very expensive, very new vehicles. One time it was because, you know, Nancy and I, early on in our marriage, we were moving, and somebody loaned us their very new pickup truck to do so. Other times it was just like, hey, I know you like cars, you're a car guy, so here, take this for a spin. And I remember thinking, wow, you for sure are not aware of how I drove my brother's car when he loaned it to me in high school, you know? Or you wouldn't be handing me those keys. But the point is that I received some pretty neat blessings different times because people decided at some level, whether it was justified or not, they decided that they could trust me. Jesus told a story in Matthew 25 of a master entrusting his servants with different amounts of money that he wanted them to invest. He gave one 5 talents, and a talent is just a measurement of weight. So let's just say 5 bags of gold. He gave another one 2 bags of gold, and another one 1. And when some time had passed, and they came back later, and 2 of them said, you entrusted me with these 5 bags of gold, or these 2 bags of gold, and see, I have earned that much more again. And the master praised them and said, you were faithful with a little, and I'm going to put you in charge of much. I could trust you with this little bit. I can trust you with a whole lot more then. And I don't think Jesus was talking primarily about finances here, all right? That's just the source of the illustration, but that can be included. But it can be God trusting us with an assignment. Will we do what his word tells us to do, or will we find excuses to not obey? It could be some big responsibility that God places in your hands. Will you be faithful with that? It could be a lot of things, but bottom line, it's good to be the kind of person that Jesus can trust. And you know, what's worth a whole lot more than people trusting you with material things is when somebody trusts you with their heart and they let you into their deepest thoughts and feelings, and that can take a lot more trust and is a much more rare gift. Now, think of having that kind of a relationship with God. Psalm 25, verse 14 says, the Lord confides in those who fear him, who respect him, who revere him. He makes his covenant known to them. Think of it, folks, of God confiding in you, telling you things, showing you deep things, sharing his heart with you in ways that he wouldn't with someone else. Would that be an honor? Would you want that? I think that'd be really amazing. You remember the Apostle Paul speaking about having a thorn in the flesh? We don't know what exactly it was, but it was given to him, we're told, to keep him humble. Do you know why he needed to be kept humble? Because God had given him a vision of heaven that was so great that I can't even understand the little bit that Paul does say about it. He says that he was caught up into the third heaven. What does that mean? I don't know. But it says he heard inexpressible things, things a man is not permitted to tell. Why was Paul given this vision? It was so great, he wasn't even allowed to explain it to us. I don't think it's a stretch to say that God trusted Paul more than he can trust most people. And so he gave him something very precious, something amazing, something we can only try to fathom. Folks, God has so much good that he wants to do in your life and in the church and in our world, but it's not automatic. There's this question that hovers over this whole thing is, can he trust us with those things? Jeremiah 33:3, call to me and I'll answer you and tell you great and unsearchable things you do not know. God has so much more than we can imagine. But can he trust us with it? Well, that leads to point number 3. Reasons that God wouldn't trust you, okay, or us. Reasons that God would not trust us with all of these amazing, fabulous, wonderful things that he could share with us. Why? Well, in thinking about the answer to this question, I remembered somebody in college who always needed to borrow things from other people. And when this person did so and they borrowed something, invariably something terrible would happen. It broke, it disappeared, whatever the case, it just was always that whoever loaned them this person something regretted it later. And it didn't take long until people began avoiding this person because they didn't want to be asked to loan them something when they knew this person couldn't be trusted. Folks, who wants to be that person, especially in the eyes of God, right? Think of how many people would love to be a wealthy, famous movie star or recording star. I mean, who wouldn't love that? And so many people, that's their highest aspiration. But how many of those people began as just, you know, good, earnest, talented people, and they end up as a real train wreck? I mean, we see it over and over again. And especially those who became famous when they were just children or teenagers. I mean, that fame and fortune sadly destroys so many of them. They were given a gift, a great thing, time proved that they couldn't be trusted with it. They allowed a great thing to cause them to do bad things, to, you know, abuse alcohol and drugs and drive fast cars while under the influence, and inevitably very bad things happen. Similarly, I wonder, you know, how many people talk about how wonderful it would be to win the lottery and all the wonderful things they'd do with the money if they won the lottery. But if you actually look at the lives of those who've did win the lottery, you know, more often than not, it ruined them. They couldn't be trusted with it. And I know we all like to think we'd be the exception, right? And at least like to find out if we'd be the exception. But again, from the text, Jesus said that he could not entrust himself to these people because he knew them. He knew what was in a person. He evidently saw reasons that he could not trust them. What were those reasons? 3 years or so later, Jesus was in the upper room with his disciples the night before he went to the cross. They had the Last Supper. He washed their feet. He taught them many things in preparation for what they were going to go through, watching their friend be crucified and all that would happen after that. But in that context, there in the upper room, Jesus said this. He said, I have so much more I want to tell you. more than you can now bear. In other words, I want to tell you more, but you just couldn't handle it. I can't trust you with this. And they proved him right. When the heat turned up, Jesus was arrested, and they scattered like complete cowards, right? I wonder what Jesus would have told them that night if he had decided that he could trust them. I wonder what God would say to us, what he would show us, what he would reveal to us, and what he would do among us if he could really trust us with it. Will we ever know? I pray we will. But look at this, a strong verse that tells what happens when something valuable is given to someone who can't be trusted with it. Matthew chapter 7, Jesus said, "Do not give dogs what is sacred. Do not throw your pearls to pigs. If you do, they may trample them under their feet and turn and tear you to pieces." That was spoken in the Sermon on the Mount. Some of Jesus' most profound teaching. And I believe Jesus here is speaking about his words that are these pearls, okay? These things that are sacred. They're precious. But some will receive those words, words of Jesus that you pass on to others and tell them, hey, you know, God says this, and here's God's truth. And some will receive them with joy and obedience, but some will tear you apart. Another verse, Proverbs chapter 3. "For the Lord detests the perverse, but takes the upright into his confidence." In other words, what he's saying there is, you know, as opposed to those that God confides in, brings into his confidence, if there's sin in our lives, in our hearts, that means God won't take you into his confidence. He won't trust us. Well, what kind of sin? Well, any sin, but from observation, think about it. If people are going to use God's blessings for their own glory, their own selfish ends, well, God can't trust them with that. That wouldn't be a good thing. It wouldn't be wise of God to do so. If they're going to dishonor God by their sin, why would God trust them? Some just treat the things of God as cheap, treat him with contempt. And some people just don't have the courage to stand for what is right when it costs. God isn't foolish. He won't trust those who are not worthy of that trust. Hebrews chapter 10 is written as a warning, saying basically, you know, God has given us this awesome thing called the gospel, the truth of forgiveness and salvation and grace. And if we treat that lightly by just going on in our sin, how does God feel about that? Well, let me read. "If we deliberately keep on sinning after we've received the knowledge of the truth, no sacrifice for sins is left, but only fearful expectation of judgment and raging fire that will consume the enemies of God. Anyone who rejected the law of Moses died without mercy on the testimony of two or three witnesses. How much more severely do you think a man deserves to be punished who has trampled the Son of God underfoot, who has treated as an unholy thing the blood of the covenant that sanctified him, and who has insulted the Spirit of grace? For we know him who says, 'It's mine to avenge, I will repay.' And again, the Lord will judge his people. It is a dreadful thing to fall into the hands of the living God." Folks, you don't want to be this person. He's saying, you know, again, I've trusted you with the gospel, with forgiveness. And if you just go on in your sin, then you're not taking it seriously. And that's a serious thing. Well, point number four, becoming one that God can trust. All right, here's where we want to get to. Okay, how do we not be that person that God can't trust? How do we become the person that God really can trust? I want all the good stuff that God has to offer, right? How can I become the kind of person who won't miss out on that? I think of Moses, who's the most humble man ever. And he came to know God in his blessing. He knew God in his wrath. He knew that an awesome, holy God, and he knew a gracious, giving God. He had a very, very unique, special relationship with the Lord. And you know the story when Moses was on Mount Sinai and received the Ten Commandments, you know, written by the finger of God. And he was up there 40 days and 40 nights. And he came down and found the people, you know, in idolatry, worshiping a golden calf. But at some point, shortly after that, around that time, we find Moses making this really bold request of God. He says, "Lord, I want to see your glory. Show me your glory." And God allowed Moses to have this very unique experience of experiencing and seeing the glory of God like no one else ever has. And looking back on Moses' life, the very end of his life, we read this was said about him. It says, "Since then, no prophet has risen in Israel like Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face." Think about that. Obviously, Moses was one that God could trust. But it's important to know that it wasn't always that way. For a majority of his life, Moses felt like a spiritual loser. I mean, he was 40 years old when he thought he knew what his calling was, and he wound up killing that Egyptian, right? And that wound up sending him off into exile. And it wasn't until he was 80 years old that he had that burning bush experience. And he came back and he led God's people to freedom. And the Sinai experience was sometime after that. All that was after age 80. We could spend a lot of time examining more about Moses' life and what made him trustworthy to God. But let me boil it down very quickly. He was humble. It wasn't all about him. And he was obedient, even when in some very hard things, some difficult things to obey, he did it anyway. He obeyed God. And he was jealous for God's glory. You know, there was that one time when God was so angry at the people and he was going to just wipe them all out. Say, "You know what? I'm just going to exterminate them, and I'm going to start over with you, Moses. Why don't we do that?" And can you imagine how that would just play on Moses' pride to think, "Wow, you know, he wants to start over with just me and that he could just be the father of this great nation of the future." But Moses, instead of letting that appeal to his pride, he said, "You know what, God? If you do that, you wipe them all out. If you do that, other nations are going to hear about it, and they're going to criticize you for that, God, and that's going to reflect poorly on you. Your glory is at stake, God, so don't do that." Wow. God could really trust Moses with his glory. And so God could bless him and do all these amazing things and show all of these amazing things to Moses. I want to be the kind of person God can trust with great things. And I'm guessing you do too. And so if we're going to be those kind of people, we need to humble ourselves. And we need to be sure that it's not about us. We need to confess our sin and be real about that with God and get that right. We need to want God. We need to want him to be glorified. And we need to want that more than we want our own glory and our own comfort. And we need to seek him. That's what it's all about. So in closing, let's ask ourselves those hard questions. How much do I really want God and his kingdom? Do we even want the deeper things of God? Or are we so focused on shallow, selfish, fleshly things that those deeper things aren't even on our radar? If so, for sure God won't trust us with the important things of his kingdom. But even if we do want those things, can God really trust us with them? If God really blesses us, will we become proud? Well, then he can't trust us. Are there some areas of obedience that we're just not paying attention to? Well, then God can't trust us with that, no matter how much we ask. Here's a passage that shows the attitude of heart of the kind of person I believe God can trust with great things and deep things. And from the book of Proverbs, he says, "You know, if you accept my words and store up my commands within you, turning your ear to wisdom, applying your heart to understanding. Indeed, if you call out for insight and cry aloud for understanding, if you look for it as for silver, search for it as for hidden treasure, then you'll understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. Does that describe you? In a moment, we're going to sing a closing hymn, Whiter Than Snow. It's a hymn that asking God to cleanse our hearts, to change us, to make us the kind of people that he can trust. Is that what you really want? I hope so. He has so much that he wants to do. Would you bow your heads with me?